thank you all so much for joining us for this panel. And I have to say, it's rare to get a panel as high-powered as the one we have here, because this really is Indian bureaucracy, all the top elements right here with us. It's sometimes said that it's a bureaucracy that's really been responsible for taking India forward and actually governing India for more than 100 years, and that's probably as true now as it is before. So we have with us people representing various facets of Indian bureaucracy, and they've been playing various different roles from it, from the people out here, from running the railways to running Indian transportation to running the Indian telecom sector to being in charge of foreign investment and how industrial policy can be better promoted. And the person who's in charge of planning and leading the whole thing, they're all here with us. So without any further ado, let me just introduce the panelists that we have. Amitabh Kant, Chief Executive Officer, National Institute of Transforming India. And of course, Niti Aayog is one of the main organizations that's spearheading a lot of the changes that we are talking about. Aruna Sundararajan is the Secretary, Department of Telecommunications. One of the most crucial sectors, I think, for a lot of the new technologies and others that we are talking about. Really been responsible for transforming the face of India. The mobile phone is most people's preferred device these days, and probably more important than anything else in their lives. So, and you're in charge of all of that. Ashwani Lohani is the chairman of the Board of Indian Railways. It's Indian Railways, of course, one of the most important areas in the economy. And if railways is important, so of course is road transport and highways. So we have Yudhvir Singh Malik, their secretary, Ministry of Road Transport and Highways. And finally, Ramesh Abhishek is the Secretary, Department of Industrial Policy and Promotion. Thank you all so much for being with us. The entire steel frame of Building India is here. Maybe, Amitabh, if I could get you to start off. At the various levels of bureaucracy that you also have represented, is it still as true today as it was in the days of the British Raj and in the heydays of the IAS, that the bureaucracy pretty much is responsible for taking India forward? And I might add, sometimes holding India back a little bit. And I'm talking about red tape.
Well, India's very functional, very vibrant democracy. It's an elected democracy. And the bureaucracy works in partnership with the elected government. And actually, in the last few years, many of the things that we've tried to do in recent times, like pushing for radical changes in terms of biometrics, or pushing for electric vehicles now, or pushing for artificial intelligence, which he would be doing, or pushing for road construction, rapid rate of road construction, taking it to 22 kilometers a day, or Ashwani trying to bring in radical changes in the functioning of the railway, is all, firstly, trying to create a lot of, we are an agent of change, because we are trying to bring in a lot of disruption in the government functioning in terms of taking India forward. But we are also very positive instruments of change in terms of constructing of roads, construction of railways. So sometimes people on the other side of the fence may think that the bureaucracy tends to be status quoist in nature. But the fact remains that the government has grown rapidly. It's growing at about, India's growing at about 7.6%. And the challenge for bureaucracy is to accelerate that pace of growth, take it to even higher levels over the next three decades for the next three decades.
You know, it's interesting you say that, because you're right, bureaucracy has often been called status quoist, and sometimes the government's been accused of not moving fast enough, not doing enough big bangs. Right now, you're having exactly the opposite allegation being made, that how many big bangs are you guys going to do in a 9 to 10 month period? And are you doing so many big bangs that you've almost sort of nuked the Indian economy in the entire process? Now, obviously, I'm talking about demonetization immediately after, followed by GST, and who knows what else is around the corner.
No, the problem is that the government is moving very rapidly, that the private sector has become too status quoist now. You know, because, you're asking for the big bang, and when you do structural changes, I mean major structural changes, you make India into a one tax, one country, you push for, making India a more formal economy, you push for far more transparency in land transactions. You know, I mean, you, These are structural changes being made with a perspective of the next 2 to 3 decades for India. And it's important if India has to grow at high rates, or if India must, you can't be a $10 trillion economy with half your economy being a black economy. It's not feasible. You can't grow with several layers of tax. So these are major structural changes, and I think we need to take a long-term perspective on this.
Okay, who else wants to come in on that? Bureaucracy is moving much faster, and industry is almost becoming status quo. Is that a...
We have actually been able to skill 11 million people in the last 3 years, and our challenge is to skill 400 million people. So when we are talking about the government going too fast, you just look at the kind of things that need to be done, the magnitude of the work that needs to be done. Highways, the speed has picked up. Railways, I mean 30% of the goods are being transported by railways. It is 10 times of the cost of transporting through, one-tenth of the cost of highway. 70% of the goods are going through roads. Virtually no river transport. I think we need to go very, very fast on so many things. And people have no patience actually, because they are so fed up of this lethargy, this sloth, corruption, this bad infrastructure. They're just fed up. So I think the government and bureaucracy are moving quite fast, and rightly so.
So the speed is a good thing, even if it causes short-term disruption. Absolutely. And dislocations. Sometimes the problem with too much speed, of course, is that not all policies are completely thought of. I mean, that's also nothing wrong with it. Like at the GST, now there's talk which is taking place as we speak about how can we fix some of the things that actually went wrong in the rush to implement it quickly. Is that okay? Is that something we should accept?
See, one of the hallmarks of the government today is it's very responsive and sensitive. And the government is not cassette or inflexible that nothing is being done about the feedback. So many changes are being made. I think the important thing is to listen to people, do something about it, fix the problems, but you cannot deviate from the road that you have taken, that you have to make structural reforms in the economy. You just can't stop things. It's so much easier to not do GST. It's so much easier. People will be happy with 7.5% growth, but do you want to grow at 10%, 12%? For that, you need to do some fundamental changes in the economy. But I think the government has bitten the bullet and they have taken a tough decision, and that is good in the country's interest.
If I could turn to you next, Arunaji, because yours is another sector which has played such an important role already in transforming India. As I said, the mobile phone is, for most people, an extension of their lives. Now, very few people can imagine life without a mobile phone. You can imagine life without lots of things, but not life without your mobile phone. But as that keeps happening, as changes keep coming, questions will come. And right now, there is a lot of distress in the sector. A lot of indebtedness is there. Companies are shutting down. Jobs are being lost. So how should people view the way the sector is proceeding right now and progressing?
Vikram, I just want to take up what you had spoken about a little earlier. And I think somewhere, in the recent past, India's, just crossed an inflection point. One, there's exploding aspiration, and a government has taken charge which wants to deliver quickly. And, people have waited for 70 long years, and there is still so much to be done. So I think it's the pace of acceleration that we've seen that is driven by the desire to respond to the kind of aspirations that we're seeing all around. And, certainly in that, I think the bureaucracy has to do much more. And I think if the bureaucracy is not doing its due diligence, then the bureaucracy is squarely to be blamed. But the private sector also needs to do much more, because what has not happened in these last 70 years is that all our goods and services, all that we've been trying to do, has largely been targeted at about 200 million people. There are another 800 million people out there, and whether it's the public sector or the private sector, we really need to start responding to those aspirations. We still have to do 80% more. We haven't even begun to scratch the surface of data. We're all saying data is the new oil. The data explosion has just begun. So I think there's a lot more to be done. And, India is a very vibrant, robust market. And therefore, I think both the medium-term and long-term prospects are very robust.
So that's another example of, for example, you'll have new players coming inside and suddenly data prices crash, everything crashes, usage takes off, 10x growth in data consumption in a 10-11 month period. flip side of that is the disruption that we were talking about. There are companies going bust, jobs being lost, and the rest of it. In your view, is it important to manage the change or say, look, we have to go, you know, hell for leather, proceed really, really fast, and if there are casualties along the way, then that's just something we have to deal with, including companies complaining and saying, this being unfair.
Look, government is very aware that we need to provide an enabling environment, and we need to provide the level playing field. I think as long as we respect the market and the rules of the market, and as long as government respects, you know, the where we need to lay down the rules of the game, I think, you know, we have, you know, enough space for everyone to grow.
Right. Mr. Lohani, if I could just turn to you next, because in a sense, a lot of what is happening in the railways is a reflection of that. How high are you aiming compared to the reality on the ground? So, for example, the bullet train obviously is a great idea, and if you actually do have the whole of the country linked up with bullet trains, it would be wonderful, it would speed up things. But that's when you have a lot of people saying that here you're thinking of spending 100,000 crore rupees on the bullet train, even though most of the money is coming in from Japan, at a time when you're having Elphinstone-type stampedes taking place, at the time when safety is not perfect, at a time when normal day-to-day services and railway lines are not good enough. So instead of aiming for the moon, should we be trying to just fix what we have?
Both consolidation as well as growth, they have to go in parallel. To set right the existing organization with all its constraints, that is one side. But at the same time, we should not lose sight of the fact that we have to catch up. We have a lot of catching up to do. Right now, our average speeds of trains, a train which carries passengers is about 45 to 50. And a goods train is about 23. We have to look much beyond that. So while we are going to set right our system, that we are already on the job, setting right the safety thing, the passenger amenities, and all those, the sloth which you talked about. But at the same time, we are also looking at high-speed trains, that they are the call of the day. We are looking at creating new corridors for freight. We are looking at creating corridors for a mid-high-speed segment, like 160 kilometers per hour. And I frankly believe that both have to go hand in hand. System is pretty solid. It's not that the system has gone haywire, but yes, we can do much better.
The quality of services still is not necessarily world class of Indian Railways, the sort of passenger amenities, and safety, of course, is a major, major concern. Now, Railway Minister yesterday was telling me, you know, was telling me in an interview that we are not going to save even a rupee on safety. We are going to spend everything which we possibly can, which is good to hear. But it's, I guess it's also partly a question of priorities, right? There is a limited sum of money available.
See, as far as safety is concerned, we realize it's priority number one, the focus number one. We can't just cut corners on safety at all. And this line we are following right now. And see, safety as well as passenger comfort and even things like punctuality, they're basically a symptom of a disease which is somewhere else. I just don't have a button by which I press that button and the safety improves, I press another button, the passenger amenities improve. No. It is a sum total of all the activities which we are doing, all the actions which we are doing. And we are going to change our processes en masse, looking at our processes relating to decision making, our processes relating to contracting, and all that will ultimately reflect in better safety. Right. Even now, we have got a couple of accidents recently, and that created a different image perception, but the reality remains that the total number of accidents have actually gone down over the years.
Manitha, if I can turn to you finally, and I think the reason I've come to you finally, of course, is also because in the example of roads and transports and highways, few people will dispute the fact that the faster they roll out and the more that they're rolling out, the better it is. Now, Mr. Gadkari and others have often had very ambitious targets saying we're going to take it up to 30, 35 and, you know, really take it forward. I just wanted to get your sense of where the roadmap is. And are we, again, rolling out the big highways? Is that what the priority should be? Rural roads? How do you see the sector rolling out?
The idea is that we should have a national highway network of about 2 lakh kilometers. That is what my minister's vision is. With today, from 91,000 kilometers 3 years back, today we are at 1,15,000 kilometers. Given this pace, we have to take it to that situation, because with 2% of national highways of the total road network, we are carrying about 40% of the traffic. But simultaneously, there is a constraint, and which is where the ministry is acutely conscious of it, that The personal private transport is increasing at a CAGR of 10% plus. If it continues to grow at this rate, then probably we would need to add one lane every 3 years, which is a huge challenge. Therefore, comes the transport side, that the focus has to be towards, you know, a shift from personal private transport to a public transport.
Yeah.
Today, I would have about a gap of about 10 lakh buses. And if you want to shift this car moving private transport people, then you need good quality buses.
Wouldn't you say it's a real opportunity for India, maybe because the roads are whatever they are and the state of transportation is whatever it has been, India could potentially leapfrog by taking a far greater leap in, let's say, electric vehicles, or finding how India is going to be a player 10 years from now in the autonomous, you know, self-driving sort of vehicles and that form of private transportation or Hyperloop or whatever it is? Is that some of the thought process that you're doing? Let's be one of the first to go electric instead of being one of the last.
As a matter of fact, the first pilot is already on. The minister in his constituency in Nagpur, there are 500 electric cars which are running as taxis for last more than about 6 months with electric charging stations and parking slots. That is the first pilot which is already going on. But coming on to the national highways as well and adding on to it, I think, Vikram, we have to appreciate one thing, that the rate at which the expectations of people are going up is far higher as compared to the rate at which we are trying to catch up. And that is the rat race. Today, when I get mails accusing me, you know, people are not saying your road has potholes or cracks or this. Of course, that also comes. But they are saying riding quality is fine, but the road marking is not good enough. Which means the rising expectations are getting on to that level, which we have to meet.
Okay.
And that is where we have to work faster.
Is India planning to be all electric at a certain stage, perhaps faster than people are expecting?
Well, we would look forward to it. He is working on it. He is driving.
Yeah, I was about to throw the question to him next.
The electric vehicles policy, he is working on it. As a matter of fact, we would love to get to.
So are we going to be the first in the world to move to some of these things?
Let me first add to what Yudhvir was saying, and I think he was making a very important point, that your cities have to be driven by public transportation. That is the key. You can't make cities for cars. You have to drive it by public transportation. That's the crux of it all. Electric vehicles is critical. Now, our view is that the internal combustion engine today in India, automobile, India is a champion in automobile and auto components. The automobile sector accounts for almost 7.2% of our manufacturing output. It accounts for if you look at the manufacturing, it accounts for 7.2% of your GDP. 49% of your manufacturing output comes from the automobile sector. So whatever you do, you have to cause a disruption. But whatever you do, you have to think global size and scale. That's number one. Think global size and scale. You can't do it for domestic market. You have to think exports, number one. Number two, the tipping point will be around 2026 when the cost of the battery would have fallen. Because 50% of the cost is battery. The cost of the battery in 2026 would have come down from $273.
Could actually surprise you. Who knows? Things seem to be moving faster than anybody was expecting.
Yeah, so $273 to $73. And by 2030, actually the number of cars, of electric vehicles, would be more than internal combustion. India must use its frugal engineering skills, its ability to innovate, its ability to do entrepreneurial spirits and skills to penetrate global markets for electric vehicles.
Why don't I throw that to you? Because one of the things that you keep hearing is that we should prepare for the big changes that are coming. What is here at the World Economic Forum, perfect place, I guess, to talk about the fourth industrial revolution. AI, nanotech, biotech, these are potentially the areas that the countries that are going to dominate 5 to 10 years from now will be the countries which are leaders in this. What are we doing with lithium? How are we managing long-term lithium supplies? What is the policy on nanotech and biotech? And how do we encourage investment and in artificial intelligence, for example? And why is it that China seems to have a lead in patents and not India? Are those the sort of concerns that you think Indian bureaucracy is really sitting and thinking about at a great length?
The new industrial policy that we are working on has a very important element on how do we do a smooth transition to Industry 4.0. AI, robotics, additive printing, IoT, all these are extremely important areas for us. We have set up an actually expert group on AI how do we integrate AI policies into our industrial policy? So, and we have very innovative and smart people, including startups, who are working on all this space. They are doing fantastic work, actually. But then our overall R&D spend is very low. If you just talk about innovation, we are spending less than 1% of our GDP. Korea spends more than 4%. I think we need to not only spend more on R&D, we also need to get more results from the R&D spend. And these new technologies are absolutely the area of future. Recently, government is setting up 4 experience centers containing all these technologies of the future of smart manufacturing, so that any unit, any entrepreneur can go and see and experience how these are working. And I think these are also great opportunities for our large MSME sector. We all know that our MSME sector suffers because of also, by and large, most areas, lack of the latest technology. I think we have to make them smart manufacturing ready, industry 4.0 ready.
At the end of the day, whatever the changes are and whatever the transformation is happening, the average Indian has way lower connectivity or access to good quality bandwidth or data than most of the other countries do. And that's something which is going to end up holding us back. And there, let's face it, there is a huge digital divide which is still there in place today.
You're absolutely right. I think there's probably no country in the world which has more at stake in the digital economy and society than we have. And fortunate thing is that India is also the fastest digitizing nation in the world. Today, we are indeed working on building those information highways. The BharatNet program, you know, in 2014, we were at about 314 kilometers of optic fiber, which had been laid. But now, as we speak, you know, it's actually reached 75,000 gram panchayats. And by the end of this year, 100,000 gram panchayats. That will mean that at least 100 million more rural Indians by the end of this year will actually have access to optic fiber. Similarly, let's look at what's happening in digital payments. We had around 1.5 million points of sale, electronic points of sale, till about November last year. But in the last 10 months, that has been almost tripled. So by the end of this year, we expect that we will actually go up to around 4.5 million points of sale. So what that will mean is that a lot of people...
But it still will be only a small fraction of the total number of transactions.
It will still be a small part of it. But the point is that that is precisely why everyone is in a hurry. The government is in a hurry. We do need to get much more fiber out there. We need to build these networks. So you're absolutely right. We don't have the luxury of time. We need to all get on with it.
You know, I have to say it's really refreshing to have 5 of the top bureaucrats in the country, and we're sitting here having a discussion, and they're all saying we need to hurry, we need to move faster, and the rest of us saying, yeah, but let's keep an eye on the reality. So that's pleasant, because normally you would think that the bureaucrats are the ones who are sitting firmly on the brakes and saying, stop moving, and you're all saying, move faster. But just that slight element of reality check that I do want to come back to, and I'm going to throw it to all of you. Because sometimes people these days are saying that, look, the aspirations are great, the vision is wonderful, where we want to get to is great. The reality of what's there on the ground right now seems to be rather rocky. So joblessness continuing to rise, very few jobs being created. The economy may still be one of the fastest growing economies in the world, but it's slowing down, and that's a cause of concern. And you can figure out what the reasons for that are. But is the reality right now something which we should be concerned about? While we should keep aiming high, and far be it for me to say we shouldn't aim high, and of course we should aim high, but is the reality a matter of some concern right now, Amitabh?
When you undertake very major structural changes of the kind which India's done, and which India was crying for, you're going to have slight dips. But I think in the long run, this will accelerate the pace. It will bring in greater integrity into the system. And in the long run, it will help you formalize your economy. And I don't think there's any cause at all to worry.
Jobs don't worry you?
So I'm coming to that. My view is that India must keep disrupting the system. It's important we do this because we must use technology to make quantum jumps forward. We'll be the first country which will probably make debit card, credit cards, ATM redundant in 3 to 4 years. I think many of these things, like the EV vehicle or artificial intelligence, India must embrace technology as a very, in a very major way to make a quantum jump. And this will cause some structural disruption in the short run. Now, much of the debate on jobs, Vikram, is based on a Labor Bureau statistic, which just takes into consideration 1.4% of the total job, formal enterprises in the country, just 1.4%. So 98.6% of the enterprises are not taken into consideration. But we've tried to analyze some of these statistics in Niti Aayog. And one of the things that comes out very clearly is that, you know, the flow of credit to the agriculture sector has radically improved. The mudra loans, 9.5 crores, and majority of them have gone to women. The number of self-help groups which have come up in, and there's a recent McKinsey study which shows that actually the country has created more than 21 to 23 million livelihood jobs in this country. So,
but you keep hearing about layoffs, right? So, telecom sector, others, there are layoffs that are taking.
So 45% of India's GDP, 43% of India's exports comes from MSME sector. And when you're carrying out major structural reforms like GST, you'll have some structural issues. But as Abhishek rightly said, that this is we are all responsive. The government is highly responsive. The government reacts. And I'm quite sure we'll put this back in order and we'll accelerate the pace of change. We'll accelerate the pace of growth.
Even if there are not that many jobs in the organized sector and in the normal type of jobs, you know, government jobs, bureaucracy, things like that, if those are starting to go down, doesn't matter because there's going to be a wave of jobs and employment in startups and entrepreneurial activity and the rest of that. That's a possible thesis, but unfortunately, we're seeing many startups coming up and then dying out. So it's not that there's really a wave of successful entrepreneurship successfully working at the present moment. It might happen in the future. Right now, there's less evidence for that, which is something I just wanted to check with you.
On jobs and jobless growth and those ideas, most of the evidence is anecdotal, that which company laid off so many people and so on and so forth. If you see, less than 20% of the labor in the manufacturing sector is employed in the organized sector. More than 80% are in unorganized sector, for which there is very little data. Because of the various labor laws and policies that the country has, most people prefer not to employ them on their roles. This is one of the legacy issues. Now, if you look at, if you want to see whether people are earning enough income at the end of the month, you should actually look at the income generating opportunities in the economy, whether it's by way of salary or wages, or it's by virtue of their own work. We have micro entrepreneurs now. We have e-commerce companies, taxi companies, sharing cabs. They are employing hundreds of thousands of people. They are more like micro-entrepreneurs. They are not counted as jobs. The logistics sector is one of the major providers of jobs, and after GST, is going to be a much bigger provider of jobs. Those are not counted because there is no data collection method for that. You look at retail sector. There's enormous amount of job creation in the organized retail sector as well, for which we have some data, but unorganized retail, we don't have the data. MSME, now more and more people are coming under GST, so we will have data about that, because they will come under the EPFO network. So I can tell you this, that we should not look just at jobs as salaried or wage employment, as CEO Niti Aayog has pointed out. We should see what kind of income-generating opportunities are available in the country. You have got these startups who are actually organizing the unorganized sector among the service providers. Our data collection and this entire perception of jobs is entirely meant around the organized sector and the wage employment. We need to get over it.
I mean, in addition to anecdotal evidence, there must be some data of this. Like, there is data, telecom companies are under stress. There's data that people are losing jobs. If what both Ramesh and Amitabh were saying is correct, that a lot of people are actually becoming entrepreneurs using various digital and other means, is there any data that you're picking up to substantiate that? And by the way, while I'm asking that, are these reports about severe joblessness and rising job cuts in the telecom sector correct? Are you hearing it?
Actually, in the telecom sector, while we have heard, you know, companies speak about financial stress, Vikram, I don't think anyone is saying that there's huge joblessness in the telecom sector. I don't think anybody is saying that.
Some reports
today. What they're saying is that there is consolidation happening. you know, and that people are trying to merge or see how they can strengthen themselves. But I don't think there are, you know, really large scale or any significant job losses. But I think the point that you were saying, whether we have any data, I think one of the problems that, you know, we have in this country is really that there is no very good tracker of, you know, fresh employment being created. Because I think the bulk of it is really, you know, getting created, you know, far away in the rural areas, you know, far from, you know, what the studios focus on. So we really don't know what is happening in those areas.
Well, I mean, it's come to the two of you because some sort of an indication as to the level of economic activity that's taking place, is it picking up, is it not picking up, is there a prolonged slowdown or not, would be from some of the, you know, infrastructural benchmarks, like, you know, how many people are using rails, is freight moving, what is your sense of how it's proceeding? And also, these sort of areas like the railways as a job creation engine, is it still going to remain or do you see that starting to go down? It is the largest, one of the largest employers in the world, of course.
See, we are an organization which is in monopoly. We are in the seller's market. People run after us to get a train ticket confirmed or to book a rake for transporting goods. So as far as we are concerned, we are growing. Every year we are growing. Though not at the pace at which we like it to be. That is because of infrastructural constraints.
So when it comes to the building the infrastructure, so one thing is that the government can do it, and I'm sure you are. But there was a lot of private companies that were getting into infrastructure. And one of the reasons why the economy is facing stress is many of those same infrastructure companies that were bidding for road contracts, were trying to build out roads, doing other stuff, they're under severe financial stress. They've got indebtedness. The banks are complaining about NPAs. How do you unlock that so that private investment can really start?
Okay, Vikram, allow me to make one comment on the job part of it before I come to your question. I think on the job side, we are at crossroads situation. In the general public mind, a good job is a white-collar job, firm, secure, with salary every month, without requiring to put in corresponding effort. All through that, I talk to the industry, they say, I have a number of jobs, but I need committed workers. So I think that mindset also has to change correspondingly in order to exploit the job opportunities which exist across organized and unorganized sector.
So you mean a good government job is not the thing that people should aim for anymore?
No, there is a limit.
And it's interesting to ask that question here on this panel to you people.
No, there is a limit. You can't be having a government job for everybody.
Yeah.
So it's like this, that if I go to my village, somebody says, chahe peon lagwa do. If I tell him, why don't you set up your business? He doesn't want to do it because a lot of effort and initiative and risk is involved. I think that kind of enterprise has to come as a part of that awareness. Now, coming to the stress test and NPAs, we had close to 73 stalled projects, out of which it has been possible to resolve close to about 66 by now. We have 6 or 7 which we are resolving. We went into, the government decided to approve a number of schemes where more than 50% of the work had been done. We went in for one-time fund infusion, readjustments, deferments in terms of the toll premiums, changing over the schemes, because BOT toll, for example, for roads was perceived as a high-risk kind of a thing. We have come out, now the government has come out with hybrid NVT model where government chips in 40%, the other guy comes, and the traffic risk is not to his account. So all these responses are quite positive, and we look at it, there are very few projects which we would say stalled or stuck up. In terms of NPAs, I would also say, I think that is where the private sector also has to do some kind of a soul searching. How does one explain that physical progress of a project is only 30%, but the debt drawn from the bank is 90%? I think the tendency to bring in equity also through the debt has to take a backseat. That discipline has to come as a part of the project execution.
Okay.
And now we are taking more and more on EPC mode. That is, I pay for the project. The moment I complete the EPC, then I monetize it, which means all land acquisition, statutory clearances, construction-related risks are taken out. We are moving on to that direction. The first bunch of 9 road assets in the TOT model is going on stream in October.
Final question that I want to get all of you to really weigh in on. The real problem when it comes to the bureaucracy is not at your level. The real problem, I mean, sometimes it is at your level as well, but by and large, it is way further down. When you're going and trying to get the average person whom the citizen is coming into contact with, your municipal officers, people at the lower levels, your tehsildars, your patwaris, that's where the sloth is. That's where the red tape is. That's where the harassment is. And those people don't present a benign face of the state, a state which is saying, let's all move forward, let's develop. You're having a predatory face of the state, which is out for rental extraction. And quite often, that's where the corruption is emerging from. So I want to know if you are really going to proceed fast. At your levels, whatever you're doing is great. How do you get that to filter all the way down to the grassroots?
So, Vikram, you can't govern 21st century India with 19th century institutions. Yeah. You need a massive restructuring of your institute. I mean, you can't, you know, my view is that the next wave of big jobs is going to come from your social sector, education, health, and India needs to restructure.
I mean, that's a fact. I could just point you for, if I dare pause you for a second, but part of what is happening right now with GST, with demonetization, yeah, with all of this, I mean, you're still using the old Inspector Raj methods, yeah, which is, yeah, in a sense, if you can call it 19th century, you're using 19th century methods, which is why so many people are complaining, the traders
but
and others.
Vikram,
saying,
let me
the
tell
price
you,
of
when
compliance
it comes
is high.
To GST, it's a very, very, you know, game-changing initiative. And as somebody once told me when I was trying to make a perfect document, that perfection is the enemy of good. Start it. Okay. You will learn midway. It is very early, and one is responding to the learnings.
I think the way you phrased it, don't make the perfect the enemy of the good, is the way most people are approaching GST right now. I'm talking about it at a more generic level. That is enough being done to structurally remove the power of discretion in the hands of petty bureaucrats and petty administration.
So Vikram,
that's what the problem is.
I think the size and scale of change is so enormous, as in GST. But I think the key thing is that everything is being digitized. I mean, look at what has been done on ease of doing business. Everything, you know, you're making states compete. You're ranking them. You're naming and shaming them. You're putting their ranking in not merely on ease of doing business, on health, on education, on water management. You're ranking district hospitals. You're making good governance, if you're not able to perform, you'll be voted out. That's the philosophy which we are saying. Good governance must become good politics in India. And therefore, the key really is about using digitization as a process. Everything should be totally online, no human intervention at all.
No human intervention at all. Are you calling for the abolishing of bureaucracy completely?
Vikram, let me just say one thing. Wherever it has been possible to put in place processes which are technology driven, that element has got eliminated. Like today, right. If I need my copy of my land records, it is available online. I can go and print it. I don't have to go and pay 200 rupees.
You still have to go to the patwari and say, will you mutate my land and he'll ask you for money.
No.
In most places, it's still happening.
It varies from state to state. So wherever you are in a position to provide a service online mode, there this is getting eliminated. Yes, it is considered that we are far from where we need to reach. Okay. There is no doubt about it. I'm looking at it that, okay, access to national highways, and we are changing our guidelines. I said, look, wherever we have constructed a service road, let the access be processed in the online mode, and the permission also goes online. Why should we put it through an examination?
Before I ask you, abolish all red tape and petty bureaucracy by the use of online methods and technology. Now that's real fourth industrial revolution taking place, if we can achieve that.
By the way, you know, while we've been speaking, the biggest governance reform, which is direct benefit transfer, yeah. I mean, what is the objective? The whole objective is that disintermediate. You know, if a citizen is entitled to something, make sure that entitlement reaches him without these layers of bureaucracy. Similarly, digital identity. Again, the idea is, you know, disintermediate. The patwari that you spoke about, you know, why do I need this patwari to certify that I am Aruna? So the point is that it started happening.
Yeah.
So I'm also, you know, a firm believer
maybe,
in
maybe technology. replace all bureaucracy with artificial intelligence. That's another radical thought going forward.
Incidentally, let me tell you, all the government benefits are going getting transferred straight into the accounts of beneficiaries without going through any human interface.
Okay,
look at public auctions of natural assets, all done flawlessly without human intervention, reverse auction and bid.
Okay, I'm looking forward to a session of the World Economic Forum that we will do right here about 30 years from now, where everyone around me is a robot. But you know, till that happens.
See, what you have said, I think needs a more complex answer. Situation is also complex. In the ease of doing business work that we are doing in DIPP, our target with the states as well as departments and regulators is to have completely technology-driven governance, as little physical interface as possible. People apply only online, offline applications are completely gone. There is a time limit within which people, the authority has to take a decision. If they don't take a decision, then it is supposed to be a deemed approval. I'll just give you an example of Municipal Corporation of Delhi, or there are so many other examples. Here there were 42 procedures for applying for a construction permit. There were multiple agencies, almost 10 agencies. And so everybody had to go to each of the agencies, get a NOC, and then come here and all that, and all the attendant problems you can imagine. Now, for last 2 years, there is only online system, no offline system, in which all these 10 agencies are integrated now. So you have to apply only once, and if you don't hear anything from there within 30 days, then you get a digitally signed construction permit automatically generated to you. Now, this is just one example, but our challenges are far more. We have been able to do it in many places, but there is so much more to be done. I'll give you an example of a power set, electricity connection reform. All these we are doing in connection with the World Bank report, and of course the ranking of states on ease of doing business is generating so much more work. We, for example, Tata Power in Delhi, and they have a system now, you can apply only online for a 100 kVA plus connection. And they have given about a dozen connections in 15-16 days. But when the World Bank team called the helpline center, they said, Kinani, you go to the customer care center, you have to apply offline. So we have a challenge of the staff at the cutting edge. So yeah. What we are trying to do now is to orient them, train them also. They know offline application possibility at all, but that person doesn't know. So all the mindset change, all the reforms that are going on from the higher bureaucracy to percolate to the lower level is definitely a challenge and something that we are addressing through much more orientation and training with them.
All right, I'm not sure how you're going to get any of this into the railways, but I guess it's possible. And I'm just thinking of what this does to joblessness. I mean, the more you're making it technologically sophisticated and bypassing that, and that's that many other jobs, perhaps people can be used to do something more useful.
We have a workforce of around 1.3 million.
Yeah.
13 lakh log. It's a damn big number. And we have a problem of the people who interact with us at the cutting edge level, they generally complain that it's not a very pleasant experience. But it's all about the complexity of the tantra which we have created. I'm heading railway right now. Just before that, I was in Air India. And there also my realization was that we have made things actually impossible to happen. They don't happen. The guy down there is frustrated. He's unable to contribute. And that is a very big frustration. If you are unable to contribute, you are getting a salary and unable to contribute. That's a very big frustration, and that reflects in your service levels. So we have to make the tantra simple. How decisions are taken and how contracts are entered into. These are the only two parameters, the only two factors. And that is we have to empower people, and that is what we are working on right now. And extremely aggressively, that each of my 13 lakh men is in a high state of motivation. He's able to contribute. He should not feel he is helpless. Okay. We have created a scenario where everybody feels helpless. Everybody feels he has got only a negative power. Everybody can stop work from happening, but not everybody can make it happen.
You have to be empowered to do the positive things.
Empowered to do the positive
things. Without also having the fear of ramifications that there's a CAG inquiry or something coming
after me. Make it very simple.
Just one quick final line from each of you on the bureaucracy. How do you give the bureaucracy a sense that they can take those decisions that are being asked for without fear that government's going to change, somebody else is going to come, you're going to be filing CBI inquiries against you? It's been one of the reasons for sloth in the past. And Then quick last line from everyone.
Support good, sensible, right decision making. Support all people with integrity and back them to the hilt. You want India to grow rapidly, you'll have to work on good faith, back people with integrity.
Okay, last line, priority, your priority going forward.
I'll put it to this, that when we are restructuring most of the processes, and particularly in our case procurement processes, do away with the discretions as much as possible.
Okay.
If you can do away with the discretions and define those upfront, then one is not reluctant to take decisions saying, you know, I have this apprehension or that apprehension.
Remove discretion.
I just make 2 points. One is regarding the Alfinston thing. Yes, it's indeed very, very saddening what happened. The fact remains ki, the load on the stations, we were not, like New Delhi station was not built to handle 500,000 men, which is handling right now. Our infrastructure should have improved commensurately, but that has not happened. And that is a ground reality. It's not
but
happened
then shouldn't
because
that be the top priority right now, I think is a point that's being made as
it
opposed
has,
to...
It has not happened because of our processes, which we have to look at. The second thing which I like to say is, I recently wrote a piece for, it got printed in the Times of India, where I said, those who idle commit no mistakes. If I work, I'll make mistakes. And if I get fired for those mistakes, then that is not really fair. Because if I take 100 decisions, 10 will be definitely wrong, 90 will be good. So we'll have to change the system so that people are able to work fearlessly, take decisions, and they should not be waiting for the music which takes place 10 years after you retire.
Yeah, and that's the point I was trying to make, and I'm not sure there's a solution to that. Because it's not that bureaucrats have not been punished for what may have been a bona fide decision that they took at at a particular period of time. Arna?
I think the important thing, as he was saying, is to empower every element in the bureaucracy and demand accountability commensurate with that empowerment. What we often find is that there's a big mismatch between the two. And I think that's one of the fundamental reforms that we need to bring in.
Okay, last line from you.
It's my experience and belief that if a bureaucrat takes a decision in a transparent manner, he or she documents it properly, the reasons for the decision, and he has no mala fide, he doesn't benefit from any of those, there's absolutely no need to worry about any agency or anybody. And this is how I personally have worked like that, and that's how it is. But I think bureaucrats need to be made accountable. It's very easy to hide behind CAG and CBI alibi and do nothing. They should be forced to take decisions, and they should do it in a transparent manner, properly documenting everything, and I don't think there should be any problem.
All right, well, thank you so much for joining us. As I said, it's refreshing to hear top bureaucrats of the country really pushing for faster, accelerated change and saying that there may be short-term issues, there'll be problems, but eventually it will get sorted out. Also, a big focus there on how you can take digital and how you can take advantage of the new technologies out there. Thank you all so much for being with us.